What is your answer to the question, what is the state of the union? Is it promising? Is it depressing? Is it moving in the right or wrong direction? What do you hope President Obama will address tonight when he gives his State of the Union address? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, February 12th. President Obama gives the State of the Union address tonight at 8 o'clock, followed by a Republican response from Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. We'll preview some of the themes the president is expected to explore, from the economy to stricter gun laws to immigration reform. And we will welcome your questions and your hopes for the State of the Union. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Charles Franklin, professor of political science at UW-Madison, director of the Marquette University Law School Poll, co-founder of pollster.com, and founder of pollsandvotes.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So how significant is President Obama's fifth State of the Union address, the first of his second term?
I think State of the Union is at the beginning of a second term, or an opportunity to restate what your goals are and to move on to new initiatives. I think the flaw with State of the Unions at this point is when they repeat the goals that we've heard for 4 years already. And I think that'll be the real test of the speech tonight, is whether it breaks new grounds or whether it sounds like a recycling of old ideas that haven't passed in the previous Congresses.
Mm-hmm. Well, we did just hear in NPR News that the White House spokesperson said that President Obama is expected to expand on themes that he addressed in his inaugural address. So does that sound like same old?
Well, you know, a lot of people think that the inaugural address pushed more vigorously on things like marriage equality, immigration, and those kinds of individual rights kinds of issues. Whether that shows up tonight is I think questionable, though maybe it will be there. The president spoke to Democratic leaders in the last week and emphasized that these kinds of expansions of individual rights are also part of economic growth. We'll see if he tries to pull those themes together tonight. A lot of the advance talk about the speech, though, has focused on an economic message that in the time since the reelection, the guns issue came front and center because of the shootings in Newtown. Immigration, we've seen a real shift on the part of some Republicans to be willing to move on a comprehensive immigration reform. And so those are two areas where events and the consequences of the election have opened doors for Obama to pursue policies that didn't look like they were really on the table last year. But the economy remains the top issue in voters' minds in every survey we have. And the theme of middle class insecurity and how we revise the economy to improve the situation of the middle class, those were major themes of Obama during the campaign, and I would expect to see them come up as maybe the core themes tonight rather than guns and immigration, though those will surely be part of the speech.
Right, and Carney went on to say that there was going to be a big focus on creating jobs and helping the middle class. So,
under the circumstances of the economy right now, it's inconceivable a president would not give a speech mm-hmm. that would talk about those issues. I think this is where the problem of what do you say for your fifth State of the Union speech comes in. And it would be true of any president at the fifth speech. But the things we've heard talked about in the leaks and advance peaks at the speech have focused on manufacturing, energy, particularly green energy, and education reform. Well, those are three themes that have been present through much of the administration. Is there anything new to be said on it, or is it simply reiterating that those policies were important in the past and they're still important? that's why it's so incredibly difficult for a president this deep into his term to break any new ground in these areas. So it'd be very interesting if he does come up with something strikingly new in those areas. And it may seem a little bit of the same old story if he sticks to themes that that he's pushed for in the past.
Yeah. Also, there was talk that he's going to insist that we do not need deep, across-the-board spending cuts that would hurt the middle class.
That's really the issue of the sequestration, the across-the-board cuts of about 8% to almost 9.5% in defense spending and in other social spending, though it does not include health care and Social Security cuts. Those are currently off the table. That sequestration battle has a March 1st deadline when those cuts are supposed to be put into effect, and represents the big fiscal battle between the president and the Congress right now. You might, under other circumstances, expect that to be the central theme of tonight's speech. But we've heard relatively little about it in previews of the speech. So one question is whether he'll choose to make those budget issues a real center of the speech. One speculation that's floated out there is that he will propose some closing of tax loopholes, some removal of certain kinds of tax breaks as part of what he will call a balanced approach to the budget. But we've heard those kinds of conversations for the last 2 years in negotiations between the president and Congress. It's hard to see how that rhetoric will move the conversation along or move the potential for an agreement along when it's been so difficult to do that in the past.
What do you think the significance is, Republicans choosing Senator Marco Rubio of Florida as the person to give the Republican response?
Well, this really represents the post-election realization of Republicans that in one way or another, there's great pressure to deal with immigration and the new generation of congressional leadership. And Rubio represents both of those. So he gets his night on the center stage for exactly this reason. We'll see how well he performs in it. He's a very good speaker in general, but State of the Union responses have sometimes been the place where careers get set back a little bit.
That's right.
They don't always go as well as the speaker hoped.
Charles, I usually you're in studio, and I don't hear your kitty meowing. That's that's okay.
I have to tell you, Joy, I just stretched the phone cord as far as I could go to open the door to the kitty box. That's the reason the cat was complaining.
I figured it was something like that, but it's okay. It's okay. I just heard a little bit of communication going on.
Well,
there,
I was about to ask you if I could take a break to open the door to the cat, but
we are going
to
take
managed
that
to stretch the phone cord.
We'll take a short break right now. We are talking with Charles Franklin. He's a professor of political science at UW-Madison. We're previewing President Obama's State of the Union address, which will be tonight. We will carry it live on Wisconsin Public Radio starting at 8 o'clock. And tomorrow morning, by the way, from 6 until 9, all morning long, different angles, different guests, different perspectives on the State of the Union and the proposals, the initiatives pushed by President Obama. And we ask you, as we are previewing the State of the Union, what is your sense of the state of our union? Do you think it's moving in the right or wrong direction? What do you want to hear from President Obama tonight? What is it that you would like him to focus on? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What is the state of our union? You get to answer that question, too. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Checking the weather forecast for today, it's going to become mostly sunny. We can expect high temperatures in the low 30s. Partly cloudy tonight, lows in the mid to upper teens, and then turning cloudy again tomorrow with highs once again in the low to mid 30s. It is coming up on 19 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, February 12th. We are previewing the State of the Union Address, which is scheduled for tonight at 8 o'clock. We will be carrying NPR's special coverage of the State of the Union Address starting at 8, followed by the Republican response from Senator Marco Rubio. By the way, after 9, Kathleen Dunn will also be looking at the State of the Union Address later this morning after 9 o'clock. Kathleen and her guests will talk about the history of the State of the Union from George Washington to the present. We are talking with Charles Franklin, a professor of political science at UW-Madison, about what we can expect to hear from President Obama tonight, and talking some about the policy and the politics of what the president is expected to focus on. Joe on Facebook sarcastically writes, "I can't wait to hear this great speech and all the things in it that will never happen. It's the same every year, no matter who is in office. I can't even bear to watch or listen anymore." Is that right, Charles? Is Joe right that nothing ever happens as a result of the State of the Union?
Well, I think nothing is too strong, but I certainly sympathize with the frustration at a long speech that has a laundry list of proposals, many of which are never heard of again. And I think that is certainly a common problem across many presidents and many states of the Union speeches. But it is a time when broad agendas are also talked about, some of which actually do pass if we go back over time and look at them. So I think they're a fair reflection of a president's agenda. They're simply not a fair reflection of the number of things that actually will be accomplished in a following year there. It's a much longer list than what actually gets done.
Certainly, something's got to happen when it comes to the economy and various budget issues that are before us, yes?
Well, certainly. I mean, if sequestration goes through and we see these across-the-board budget cuts, those will have consequences. Different sides would argue whether they're good or bad consequences, but we will certainly see some significant reductions in military procurement, buying of products for the military. We'll see cutbacks on other aspects of military readiness and personnel. And on the non-military side, we'll see cuts in funding for education programs, highways, prisons, police, the Weather Service. All of those will be subject to these 8% across-the-board reductions. So I think there's plenty of room for debate about how we best handle the budget problem, the deficit over the long haul, and I'm sure the president will outline his ideas on that, as will Senator Rubio in the Republican response. But that's going to be on the agenda of Congress as soon as the sun rises tomorrow morning. And it doesn't mean that we will resolve this in any way other than moving ahead with sequestration. It at the moment, looks difficult to do that. But whatever happens with sequestration still leaves the future for budget planning and potential changes. Just because we start down that road doesn't mean changes can't be made at later stages. So I see this as a long, drawn-out process of negotiation, rather than a particular brinksmanship coming up to March 1st, though both sides will certainly see many of their favorite programs hurt by sequestration. Yeah. That was the reason we got it in the first place, was it was intended to force both parties to negotiate a better deal. And when it turned out to be impossible to settle on a better deal, these fairly draconian cuts that neither side wants to see in place, have now moved ahead.
Now, the president, as you mentioned a little earlier, is going to be supposedly talking a lot about creating jobs and creating a thriving middle class by, in part, making investments in education, infrastructure, clean energy, and manufacturing. Do you foresee a big political fight over those investments?
I think Republicans will certainly point to them as more government spending, more increases in government at a time when the budget is, they will say, out of control. And that's a story and an argument that we've heard for 4 years now. So I think that's where you might see this very much be more of the same rather than anything that really provides breakthrough ideas or new initiatives that come in directions that we haven't already fought over. What's so interesting about immigration right now is it represents a shift in the thinking of a number of Republicans, though by no means all Republicans, on the issue of immigration, something that we've been stalled over since President Bush tried to move immigration reform in 2005 and 2006. So that's a good example of an opportunity for movement on an issue that seemed immovable for a long time. At the moment, I don't see that we have a similar opening on the budget, because it's very hard to see how either side at this moment sees their interests in changing their position. Republicans see their constituents strongly opposed to more government spending. Democrats see their constituents as strongly opposed to major cuts in programs that help help their constituents. So I think for that reason, the budget may be the area we're least likely to see a grand compromise on, even though that's been an enduring issue for these 4 years.
Mm-hmm. But back to immigration reform, that is now a priority of the president, and now a bipartisan proposal is also out there, including one of the co-authors being Marco Rubio. How far apart are the president and the Republicans who are joining the immigration reform effort?
There are certainly some important differences, and those details, of course, are, as the story says, where the devil lives in mm-hmm. the details. So it may be hard even there, but there's certainly a much smaller gap between the president's position and the Republicans who are part of this bipartisan deal or group of senators in particular. Where more opposition may come is on the House side in the Republican Party, and I think it's still unclear whether a bipartisan bill in the Senate with strong Republican support can nevertheless carry the House along on a reform that would be acceptable to both the White House and the Republican senators. But there's clearly much more movement on that issue now than we saw, say, during the presidential primary debates last spring. So I think there's been a dramatic shift there that opens possibilities that were not previously present. And then the problem is reaching a deal that's actually acceptable to both sides.
Mm-hmm. Do you see any compromise or bipartisan cooperation when it comes to gun control?
I think the strongest opportunity there is on background checks, universal background checks. Even that will run into some opposition, but recent polling has shown extraordinarily high support among the public for universal background checks whenever a gun is bought. One recent poll showed 92% supporting that. That's an area in which the National Rifle Association in the past supported universal background checks, but now is opposed to them, and so there will be still a significant debate on that. When it comes to the assault weapons ban or high-capacity magazines for guns, there I think that is much less likely to pass. And I guess that one side question is whether there are other elements of gun safety or gun control, if you prefer, that might work their way into legislation that haven't been as prominently talked about, but which might go towards reducing the number of guns on the street, as they say. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some possibilities of a bit of modification of existing law. But the gun supporters have a historic record of being very effective in blocking legislation they see as anti-gun. So I think that still remains a major challenge, though background checks may be the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, and the State of the Union will be featuring prominently, apparently, victims of gun violence. Tickets are being given to congressmen, Democrats in particular, who are going to be apparently inviting people who are victims of gun violence to be a part of the audience. So that is going to be a prominent feature tonight.
Exactly, and that will put, by most accounts, somewhere around 20 gun violence victims in the audience, in the observation area. Republicans have also invited someone, Ted Nugent,
that's
the rock
right.
star, who's extremely outspoken and pro-gun and very critical of Obama.
He's just going to be sitting there in the audience.
That's the understanding. I believe he has said he would do a press conference afterwards. But this is simply reflecting that the guns issue is divisive, and it's one where strong Republican support for guns is still part of the issue, and that's why it will be hard to pass.
The economy, gun control, immigration, all expected to be part of President Obama's State of the Union address tonight. We are previewing the State of the Union, and we're asking you, what do you hope? What do you hope will be addressed tonight? What do you think the State of the Union is? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. First, we'll check news. What is the State of the Union? Do you think it's moving in the right or wrong direction? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Tuesday, February 12th. President Obama gives the State of the Union address tonight at 8 o'clock, followed by a Republican response from Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. We will be carrying that address and the Republican response on Wisconsin Public Radio starting at 8 o'clock tonight. This hour, we are previewing some of the themes the president is expected to focus on, from gun control to immigration reform to the economy. And we ask you, what do you want to hear addressed? Where do you want to see change? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Charles Franklin, a professor of political science at UW-Madison, director of the Marquette University Law School Poll, co-founder of Pollster.com, and founder of PollsandVotes.com. And Charles Franklin, what about foreign policy? Is the president expected to address foreign policy issues in the State of the Union, most particularly the provocative nuclear test from North Korea today?
Right. I think this is a great example of how events in the world have a way of working their way into policy, and in this case, the speech tonight. North Korea detonated its third nuclear test weapon overnight, and it's hard to believe the president won't have at least a few words to say about that in the speech tonight. And that comes at a time, interestingly, when the administration has been moving ahead with efforts with the Russians to negotiate some further reductions in our stockpiles and the Russian stockpiles of nuclear weapons. So here you see both sides of the nuclear proliferation equation. The dangers of a North Korean and potentially an Iranian nuclear capability, and at the same time, negotiations with Russia over limitations and reductions of nuclear arms. Those are things that are on a president's plate at any time. And when a foreign power like North Korea acts in this way, immediately pushes itself onto the president's agenda. I would not expect to hear a lot about that tonight, but I'd be very surprised if we don't hear it mentioned. And in the broader world of foreign policy, the winding down of the Afghanistan war is something that presumably he will mention. But again, at least in the advance discussions of the speech, foreign policy has played a decidedly minor role as opposed to the focus on domestic policy that we've heard about so far.
Yeah, and one analyst said that the North Korean test was timed to get the attention of the United States.
Certainly possible, though I think it would get our attention no matter what, but certainly coming the night before the State of the Union is a, if it was intentional, it was effective and dramatic for getting our attention. Now, this is the third detonation that they've had over several years, so in that sense it's not as dramatic as, say, the first one might have been. But this is an important development, and North Korea is certainly an unpredictable state that we have to deal with.
Yeah. And what about, I'm going to take a call on foreign policy. Jim in Milwaukee is with us. Hello,
hey,
Jim.
Hey, good morning. I was just listening to the long list of the gun victims that are going to be invited tonight. And I'm just wondering, I didn't hear anything, or I'm not sure if it would be, if it's planned or not, but is there any mention of Ambassador Chris Stevens' family or Tyrone Woods' family, Glenn Doherty, Sean Smith? I mean, this was a guy killed in action, really, an ambassador. First time it's happened in how many years? Is there going to be a mention, or will there be any representation?
You're talking about Benghazi, Jim.
Yes.
Yeah, well, will that come up, Professor Franklin?
I would be surprised if the president raises it in his speech. And I have not heard any comment one way or another on the family or the other the families of the other people that were lost in Benghazi.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly might hear about it from Senator Rubio's response to the State of the Union.
Mm-hmm. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Charles Franklin, a professor of political science at UW-Madison. We are previewing the State of the Union address. And wondering, what is it you want to hear addressed? And what is your answer to the question, fill in the blank, the state of the union is blank? How would you fill in that that blank? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Usually, Professor Franklin, the president will say the State of the Union is great. The State of the Union is moving forward. It's usually never the State of the Union is awful.
Right. Well, no president wants to take credit for an awful State of the Union, though in bad times they can certainly say we are struggling, but we will get better.
Mm-hmm.
I think in part the dilemma of President Obama is that we have had steady and significant growth for quite a bit of his term, but that growth has remained at levels below what we would like to see in a recovery. And, you know, so you have that continuing difficulty of substantial unemployment, even though the unemployment rate has been coming down steadily and job growth has been pretty steady. And we had the disturbing news that the fourth quarter of last year showed I think it was 0.1% decline in gross domestic product, the measure of the economy's total output. Now, that may be revised because all of those numbers are revised as more data come in, but it was certainly a warning shot that our recent growth rate, which has been around 1.7 to 2% growth, is fragile enough that we could see a dip and a return to recession. Those are certainly the kinds of concerns that a president always has. And it means that in talking about the state of the nation, he has to be aware that he has to portray the challenges. And I think that's why the focus on the middle class may be prominent tonight, because it involves a set of claims about how his policies can improve the status of the middle class, which has really suffered tremendously during this recession and in some ways in terms of wage growth over the previous 20 years. So that, I think those themes may come up as challenges, but things we can move forward on rather than as negatives. So we'll see how he addresses those questions.
Mm-hmm. And I know, Professor Franklin, you track and follow public opinion and polling. How are we feeling as a nation? Do we think things are headed in the right direction? Are we feeling optimistic? What do the public opinion polls tell us?
Well, we've seen some improvements in optimism and the view of the country. President Obama particularly saw a bit of an upturn in his job approval rating and a little bit of a decline in his disapproval rating following his reelection. But in these highly polarized and partisan times, that bump was smaller than we normally see for reelected presidents. In terms of is the country headed in the right direction, the public remains significantly pessimistic about that, though that pessimism has been true for a number of years now. It's a little hard to gauge it. And finally, on consumer confidence, the idea that now's a good time to buy or spend money or get a new car, we've generally seen some upturns in that, but with month-to-month variations that make us seem still a bit skittish about how optimistic or pessimistic we really feel.
Mm-hmm. Do we sense the polarization? Do we think it's just futile that nothing's going to happen because of the partisan divide in Washington?
Well, I think polarization remains very real, and with divided government, you always have significant difficulty moving either party's agenda because somebody can always block that. So in the Republican-controlled House, it's very difficult for Democratic-backed legislation to pass there. Likewise, on the Senate side, Senate Democrats can block Republican legislation. So this is normal, if you will, when we have divided government. But the divisions between the parties and the policies they each want seem significantly separated by quite a gulf when it comes to the economy and budget matters. So I think it's not simply the divided government, but it's the gap in policy between the two parties that's maybe more striking in recent years, in the last 2 or 3 years, than it typically has been during divided governments in earlier years.
We are talking with Charles Franklin, a professor of political science at UW-Madison, previewing tonight's State of the Union address. President Obama will deliver that address at 8 o'clock tonight, followed by a Republican response from Senator Marco Rubio. We will carry NPR's coverage of the speech starting at 8 o'clock tonight. You can hear the coverage tonight on Wisconsin Public Radio, and you can join us tomorrow morning, where we will hear from a wide variety of guests, many different perspectives on the various issues that come up during the State of the Union. So, big follow-up, a big roundup of guests tomorrow between 6 and 9 on the State of our Union. And we ask you now, what do you want to hear tonight? What do you think is the State of the Union? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Checking the weather forecast for today, becoming mostly sunny. Highs will be in the low 30s. Coming up after 7, the Pope will resign at the end of the month, becoming the first Pope to do so in 600 years. I'll talk with my guest, a Madison area priest, about the announcement, as well as a look at what lies ahead for the Catholic Church going forward. That's coming up after 7 o'clock. Talking for the rest of this hour with Professor of Political Science at UW-Madison, Charles Franklin, about President Obama's State of the Union address tonight. We have talked some about some of the themes of the speech, some of the proposals expected when it comes to comprehensive immigration reform, ways to prevent gun violence, things to improve the economy, create jobs, and help the middle class. What about you? What do you want to hear? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Talked a little bit, too, about some of the foreign policy issues that might come up. Is there anything else, Professor Franklin, before we take calls, that we can expect tonight from the president besides those broad areas we just discussed?
I think we've covered the areas that at least have been talked about enough that they wouldn't be surprises.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes presidents like to hold a surprise back, and so perhaps we will hear something on that. I think one thing that people have speculated about is whether there's any conciliatory rhetoric in the speech. You know, a call for finding a bargain, finding a way to work together, or whether the president will move on with his proposals and not emphasize that potential for compromise. That's maybe a modest rhetorical issue, but it's important for how it presents his positions vis-a-vis the Congress or the Republicans in whether it's only his proposals or whether it's also an invitation to a grand bargain, one that's been very elusive in the recent years.
Let's go to the phones. Ted in Wilmont is with us. Hi, Ted.
Hello. And in preparation for the sequestration, I would like to see in the state of economy, in the State of the Union, more about the state of the economy in order to use executive order for federal employees to reduce the hours worked, say, from 40 down to 36. Significant savings in labor costs, and try to get some type of sponsorship in the House of Representatives or the Senate for the increase of minimum wage to more of a living wage. And with government leadership in both government employees and contracts that are bid to the government, if they were reducing the number of hours worked per person and increase the amount of wages on the lowest end of the scale, there would be more, in the long run, there would be more people working and a slightly lower amount of money for the upper classes. And I think that would improve consumption to improve our economy. Not that I expect the president to necessarily use executive order and try to get bipartisan sponsorship for the improvement of minimum wages, but I would like to see something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think, Professor Franklin?
Well, these are interesting proposals, and I'm sure that we'll see a number of them floated from both sides, actually, about what to do about the economy. I think the interesting part here about what role the president can do with executive orders, whether it's in budget matters or whether it's in public other policy matters, is potentially an interesting one where a president who feels blocked by the House of Representatives in this case may have some options through executive orders to do some things. We saw some executive orders on guns, for example, back at the end of the beginning of this year. On these specific issues that Ted raises, I think those are things that we'll see whether they come up or other things come up in the speech or in the Republican response as well.
Yeah, and while I also doubt that he would have a specific proposal to reduce
federal government working hours, but the whole idea of putting more money in the pockets of the middle class in terms of, like, say, a hike in the minimum wage, that is the president's philosophy, isn't it?
Yes, in principle. In practice, we'll see. I think one key point here is that Ted's ideas here, other people's ideas are floating around about how to deal with the budget. One that's come out just recently is a 1% increase in taxes coupled with a 1% across-the-board cut in spending, including Social Security and Medicare, and that that would have about the same budget impact as the sequestration that we're facing. Now, as I'm not sure who is backing that proposal, but my point is simply to say there is a lot of different ideas floated about what to do with the budget, and some gain some prominence and popularity, but then are very difficult to pass, especially if they're not strongly embraced and supported by one side or the other.
Thank you, Ted. June in Shawano is with us. Hello, June.
Good morning, Joy.
Morning.
Good morning, Professor Franklin. I'd like to say that I had a kitty once who started the day with my telephone. When I was on the phone, he didn't understand, so it got tangled up in the cord and everything.
Right. Yeah.
To add a little joy to this very dark discussion. As a former economist, a civil servant also, I was trained in the 60s, and I am a Keynesian, or a Keynesian, and I believe strongly that the government has to do something in terms of spending and creation of jobs. This is a dream, of course. And we've not seen austerity do anything in the European community. We've seen the rise of the Golden Dawn in Greece, very anti-everything and very violent, and also some in Germany, and this is not what we want.
All right. Thank you, June. Because we're so short on time, the president's not going to be pushing for austerity, is he, Professor Franklin?
No, certainly not, though how budget cuts can gain a handle on the deficit in the long term is part of the president's plan. He has talked a bit about some forms of entitlement reform, which are major drivers of the deficit. That when we say entitlement, we mean that people have a right to get it. But it's things like Medicare and Social Security, which together are a very big chunk of the federal budget. So controlling the growth of those so that they don't grow as fast as they currently are projected to is one of the mechanisms for gaining long-term control. The president has supported in the past some forms of control over those, but he's been very reluctant to go with sharp cuts or sharp reductions in benefits. That's, again, a major dividing line between the parties, and I think we'll maybe see elements of that in Rubio's response tonight and certainly in the ongoing debate between the sides.
You
made mention of the European experience with austerity, which has been difficult for some of their economies, in particular Britain.
Yeah. We have less than 30 seconds here. I'm going to make a prediction. What do you think President Obama is going to say? The State of the Union is blank.
Improving.
All right. And I hope your kitty's content now. Is your kitty content?
Oh, she's much happier
now. Oh, good.
Now.
All right. Thanks. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Charles Franklin, professor of political science at UW-Madison. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Cynthia Schuster, and to Amanda Magnus for producing this program. Thank you for listening, and I hope you tune in tonight when President Obama delivers his State of the Union address tonight at 8 o'clock. You can hear it live here on Wisconsin Public Radio, and we'll do lots of follow-up tomorrow morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.